From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Mike Levin, Ryan Finley. We are part of the Arizona Daily Star, and before every Arizona home football game, we come out to Frogenfurk and we host a live podcast. And it's always a good time to come out here, Ryan.
Is there anything better than University Avenue? You know,
during the semester,
in school, during the football season, it's teeming with activity. It's humming, and obviously a big football game here on Saturday, a game that's bigger than we probably would have thought a couple months ago. You want to talk about must wins? This is a must win.
Absolutely. Michael Lev, you look right? at Ryan with a disgusted look on your face.
He looked askance
at
me.
Well, I mean, of course it's a must win. It's a can't lose. They have to blow them out and look really good doing it, mm-hmm. or people will just not be convinced that anything has changed or improved.
Right.
You know, that's what's at stake in this game. I mean, it needs to be one where it's not a contest mm-hmm. from the opening kickoff. Mm-hmm. where they're dominant on both lines of scrimmage. If that doesn't happen, then the doubters are going to continue to be prevalent, and people are going to have a lot of skepticism heading into what really maybe, and we'll talk about this a lot next week, but maybe the biggest game of Kevin Sumlin's tenure coming up against Texas Tech.
Okay. To me, it's interesting. You know, we sat here 2 weeks ago, right, I mean, kind of in the same spots here at Frogenfurk, mm-hmm. and talked about how that season opener against Hawaii was all the things we just said about the NAU game, right? A must-win game, a huge game for Kevin Sumlin, a huge game for the Arizona Wildcats. And they went out and really, I mean, fell flat and started slow, rallied late, ended up a foot short of possibly tying the game or 3 feet short of tying the game. Michael Lev, how do you think this team's evolved since then, and is this a game you can move past or get over?
They have to.
Right.
I mean, they don't have a choice.
Right.
They have to move past it. You know, there's a certain sort of emotional residue, I guess, mm-hmm. in the wake of a game like that that probably, you know, lasts a couple days or so, especially when you have a bye. You know, as Kevin Sumlin said, it's a good thing and a bad thing. A lot of times players like to just get back out there and play right. after a disappointing performance, in which case you sort of have to just shake it off and move on. In this case, they had a whole week to kind of examine themselves. And, you know, there might have been some tense moments during practice, during the bye week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe some friction between players or friction between players and coaches. But I think that can be healthy
yeah.
in the long run to just sort of work out whatever the issues are.
In a lot of good teams, they always go through friction, especially
sure.
at the start of the season.
Especially in football,
mm-hmm. yeah,
too. Right. You know, I mean, there's a lot of tension that gets built up. They have to move on. Mm-hmm. I think that being at home will help.
Mm-hmm.
As I wrote this week, they have been a much better team at home. Mm-hmm. You know, even the games that they've lost at home have all been close. They've been competitive. They have a winning record at home. I don't know what the crowd is going to be like for a 7:45 p.m. game, you know, still sort of during monsoon season against, you know, NAU coming off a loss. But there still will be pretty good energy in the building, mm-hmm. I am sure. It's been a long time since they've been on that turf. And I think they'll, you know, I think they'll show up and put on a good show.
Is this, I know the way college football is, but is this a game where Arizona can justify running it up? Is this a game where let's say, could Khalil Tate throw for 500 yards? And is that something they would want to do to try to get Arizona's maybe energy and enthusiasm back after that week zero loss?
I would
loss?
Say run it up by running the ball.
Okay.
I mean, I don't – look, when Grant Gunnell comes in the game, let's say in the fourth quarter, because it's 57-17, you know, are they just going to hand the ball off every time with the freshman quarterback trying to get him some experience? They probably not. They'll probably just run their offense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see this as a game where they're going to intentionally run up the score. I think if they're going to do it, they're going to do it mostly with the running game,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was going to be a much bigger factor in the first game than it was. And this is a game where I could see them rushing for 300 or 400 yards.
You know, one interesting thing that you talked about earlier this week on radio, Michael Lev, was when you had a chance to speak with Donovan Lai and the offensive lineman. They were Hawaii. They were putting in a lot of guys in the box, and that forced Arizona to throw the ball at the start of the game. Talk about some of the comments that they made about that.
Yeah, I mean, he said that they gave him an unexpected look. More linebackers than they thought were going to be in the box, which I don't know why that's such a big deal. I mean, it's a wrinkle. You know, it's a little bit different, but it's not like, I don't know, like you're blitzing eight guys on every play or something totally outrageous like that. So it took them a little while to adjust. I think it took them too long to adjust. My thing, though, is you're Arizona and they're Hawaii. You've beaten them every time you've played them before Saturday night. Why are you letting them dictate what you do? Why don't you dictate what they do? Say, extra linebacker in the box, so what? We're going to run the ball anyway. We're going to physically dominate you. That's the mentality that I think has been lacking, maybe for a while. I don't know. Maybe since the Dick Tomey days, Ryan.
Can we talk about RPOs for a minute, though?
Sure, yeah.
What's college football talk without RPOs?
Without RPOs. I mean, RPOs, and if you're listening, you know about college football, so I don't have to explain it. But they're run-pass options, right? The quarterback has a chance to either hand the ball off or take it himself. Lev, how many of those decisions made, if you had to guess, I know that you don't know, but if you had to guess, is how much of that is the quarterback's decision? How much of that's the head coach
offensive coordinator? Yeah, I think early in the game, they were letting Khalil have a little bit more freedom.
Okay.
In that regard, if you remember, Justin, on Monday, Kevin Sumlin made reference to taking the tags off the plays later in the game, which I think means that this is no longer an option. This is a run or a pass or a play action or whatever we're calling here. There's no like reading the defense.
The guys going into the play know exactly what's going to happen.
Right. So I guess my question is, like, do you think that having a pure RPO type system where you're giving the quarterback a ton of freedom is a good idea for this quarterback and for this team?
No.
I'm not sure it is.
No.
I'm not sure it is, because I think there's an identifiable strength that this offense has, and that's running the ball, whether that's with running backs or with Khalil Tate. And I think he's still relatively new as far as kind of like having the having the controls, you know.
Being Khalil Tate is still new.
Being at the Khalil, as far as like, to use a Star Trek term, being at the con, you know, having the con.
Con short for control.
Yeah, so I think so.
In the future, they just cut words in half.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's a better time for all of us. More enlightened era of man. I think that, and I've written about this, we've talked about this, they should have come out with a commitment to run the ball no matter what the look was.
Right.
And say, we're gonna be stubborn about this, we're going to stick to it, it's going to pay off later on in the game. I think you're going to see something like that against NAU, where they're like, you know what, we need to establish confidence and rhythm with our offensive line. And we're going to stick to this, and this is the type of team we're going to be. And then, as I've also said and written, everything else becomes so much easier when you can do that. You can do the play action. You can do the quarterback pulls it out and runs around the corner.
Sure. Everything's also easier when you're playing a Division I FCS team at home.
But here's the thing, though.
Right?
You said, you know, Khalil Tate, he shouldn't have the controls to, you know, make decisions like that. But this is his third year as a starting quarterback, or if you want to say 2.5 years. I mean, he's had time, even though, you know, there's offensive coordinator changes, he's had time to get used to the offense and really become that person that can make those controls.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I guess my point would be, when you look at Khalil Tate's profile, what are his strengths? You know, I wouldn't say that his number one strength would be, you know, a la Peyton Manning, walking up to the line of scrimmage, deciphering exactly what the defensive look is, and getting them into the perfect play, right? I think it's much more so, you know, using his athleticism, using his incredible arm strength to make plays. And if I were Khalil, like, my focus over the last 2 weeks would be more like on my fundamentals, my footwork. There were, I'd say, about three balls that he missed that I think were just strictly a matter of his feet not being set on him rushing those throws a little bit. And those are those little plays that you need to make to get your offense into a rhythm early in a series or early in a game.
So before we go through our predictions for this Saturday's game and also the Pac-12 football schedule, a little throwback for you guys. Since we're looking at the TVs here at Frogenfurken, and we did see Antonio Brown's mug on on this television screen. Michael Lev, did you know this? 10 years ago, Arizona opened up the season against Central Michigan in 2009. On that Central Michigan team, Antonio Brown.
Oh, wow.
Who did not lead the Chippewas in receiving. He led them in rushing. He had like 3 carries for 31 yards. I'm assuming those were jet sweeps. But, Ryan, you were at that game. What do you remember about that?
I remember
Nick Foles being on the sideline?
I remember as Arizona game plan for Central Michigan, the one thing we all knew was that Antonio Brown was incredible. And that the name of the game wasn't necessarily slow down Central Michigan. It was don't let Antonio Brown single-handedly beat you. Even then, and it's funny, you know, when they showed up, I expected, I guess, kind of a Terrell Owens, Jerry Rice type, right? Somebody, maybe somebody freakishly athletic, somebody big, somebody prototypical.
Yeah.
He was not that. I mean, he's average-sized dude who just happened to be much faster and much more skilled than everybody else on the field that day. I remember thinking with him, and then I believe it was 2 years later with Ladarius Green of Louisiana Lafayette when they came here. I remember watching both of those teams and going, oh, there's one guy on this team who's going to play for a long time in the NFL. And at Central Michigan, that was Antonio Brown. And at Lafayette, it was Ladarius Green. Both of them just instantly stood out on a football field.
It's crazy to think of the NFL figures that were in that game, though.
Oh, yeah.
You have Antonio Brown. You have Nick Foles sitting on the sideline. And Rob Gronkowski also sitting on the sideline with a back injury.
Yeah.
It just amazes me going back and seeing that box score or seeing the rosters for both teams and seeing some of the NFL guys that were on that team.
Yeah, two of the three of those guys are going to be sitting out in week one, it seems like. Well, Gronk obviously retired.
Gronk,
Antonio
yes.
Brown, it seems like, is going to be suspended.
I was like, you know something about Nick Foles? But, guys, as we head into week two of the college football season, what were your biggest takeaways from Pac-12 opponents last week?
There are two really good teams in the conference, I think.
Oregon being one of them?
No.
No? Washington.
No, I'm not.
I thought Oregon looked pretty good against Auburn until second half.
The jury's kind of still out with Oregon because they were missing so many of their wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's see what this team looks like with a full complement of receivers. That really hurt them later in the game. Nothing was open downfield. Everything was checkdowns. Their offense became really kind of conservative as a result. So I'd say let's wait and see. But I was referring to Washington and Utah, mainly.
Right. Yeah, I watched that too, you know. Utah impressed me with, I thought, the way it out-physicaled BYU. BYU, as we all know, is a very physical football team.
Ryan loves to say out-physical.
Out-physical.
I get that in every podcast.
It's a very football thing. I really was impressed with Utah. I was impressed with Arizona State. They didn't show a whole lot. They didn't really play anybody of significance. But, you know, anytime you can go out with a true freshman center and a true freshman quarterback and a backup punter and a backup kicker and still be okay.
That was the backup punter, the guy who averaged like 75 yards a punt?
Yeah, Matt Turk's nephew or whatever
good
it is.
God.
Yeah, backup punter.
You know, the guy set a record.
Yeah, Pac-12.
NCAA record.
Pac-12 special teams player of the week. Yeah, backup punter.
For Utah?
No, for Arizona State.
Sorry.
Can I bring up something about Arizona State? Jaden Daniels, obviously super impressive. Everything we've heard and read about him, great. Seems like he's a good leader, super talented, et cetera, et cetera. My only concern about him is he's 175 pounds at 6'3". I just feel like at some point, like, someone's going to get a hit on him, and it's, you know, there are going to be consequences, unfortunately. Like, he might be a great player down the road. I just have some questions about his durability as a true freshman without having had a full off season to, you know, put some muscle.
I'm not sure where else in the country he would have played. Of the schools he considered, I'm not sure where else he could have played right away.
And, so good choice then.
I mean, that's the risk that you take when you start a true freshman, right? Is he physically ready? Is he mentally ready? Had Jaden Daniels redshirted this season, probably puts on 25 pounds, probably learns the playbook. Herm Edwards thinks that they're a better team with him under center. And after watching them play last week, I can't say I disagree. This is a team that I think is going to be kind of sneaky good this year. And somebody, certainly if I was the U of A, I'd be very concerned about it.
Yeah, the other good team, I think, is Washington. Obviously, they also played an FCS opponent in Eastern Washington, but they looked really good, and Jacob Eason looked really good, which was kind of the biggest mystery coming into the year. But kind of the shame of Arizona kind of, I don't know, just sort of treading water at this point is that the South, other than Utah, I mean,
is wide open.
It's wide open. I mean, USC is down in chaos, lost their starting quarterback. UCLA still, they haven't clicked yet under Chip Kelly. Colorado has a new coach. ASU, you had them down by 19 points in the fourth quarter last year, and they still do have a true freshman quarterback and some things to figure out. I mean, the path to second place, I think, is there. And it's up to Arizona to take advantage of that. I'm just not sure that, you know, it's all going to come together for the Wildcats.
Right. Unfortunately for Arizona, they got Utah at home this year.
Right.
So that's your toughest Pac-12 South opponent. You get them at home. That's good for them.
Right. I think as poorly as we thought Arizona played against Hawaii, Michael, you probably watched most of the Pac-12 South teams last week. I mean, do you think they would have beaten UCLA? I
think they definitely would have beaten UCLA. UCLA is missing like seven starters in that game, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson looked
not good.
Awful.
Yeah. Could they have beaten USC without JT Daniels?
I don't know about that. It would have been competitive,
right.
At least.
Right. I think would have beaten Colorado.
Maybe.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, Arizona, again, it was kind of a stain on the Pac-12 in week zero, but the Pac-12 didn't exactly acquit itself in week one either. You know, this is a league that, again, you know, we're looking at, you know, who's the saving grace of this league? Who's playing on New Year's Day or in a college football playoff? I mean, who, you know, can we squint hard and say that there are maybe two teams, maybe three? Is it Washington, Oregon, and Utah?
How about this? Are we missing the boat on Washington State again?
I feel like we do it every single year.
I feel like I might be. I feel like I'm discounting them, and maybe I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought coming into the year, like how many years in a row can Leach pull this off with a new quarterback and, you know, all 2- and 3-star players on defense, and they lost. Remember, they lost a safety in this summer
to the
supplemental draft.
The Cardinals
got kicked off the team.
Yeah.
I just thought all that added up to a little bit of regression. You know, like something like 8-4 instead of 10-2. But
I will reserve judgment until they play somebody other than New Mexico State.
Right.
Yeah. New Mexico State, as we know, and we all like New Mexico State, New Mexico State faces challenges maybe unique to anybody in America when it comes to recruiting good football players. So, but you're right. Washington State didn't do anything to eliminate itself from contention last week. What did it do? Hang 50, whatever?
Yeah, and the quarterback was, you know, like 22 of 23, Anthony Gordon, in the first half of the game. You know, doing Washington State things.
Yeah.
Looking ahead to this week's schedule, Sacramento State, they're playing against ASU in Tempe.
Friday night football
under the Friday Night Lights.
Two weeks and no Saturdays for ASU.
Northern Illinois, they take on number 13 Utah. Number 25 Nebraska comes to Colorado. San Diego State, the Aztecs, they play the UCLA Bruins in the Rose Bowl.
Right. Aztecs opened up with Weber State last week and won 6-0. And so the Aztecs versus UCLA, this could be another 6-0 football game.
So UCLA, is it upset watch if UCLA?
No. I think UCLA should win the game. UCLA should win that game.
I don't know. I'm not feeling great about the Bruins right now. If they don't get some guys back.
Yeah. I'm curious if DTR is the starting quarterback on Saturday. I'm not sure he did anything against Cincinnati to lead me to believe that he should be their guy going forward.
You know, you mentioned Northern Illinois coming to Utah. The one problem the Utes are going to run into when it comes to the college football playoff this year is their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I think BYU is easily the best non-con game that they've got. I think even within the conference this year, you know, good news, bad news. Like, they miss a couple of the really good teams, which makes it more likely that they could go 8-1 or 9-0 in conference play, but it also weakens their strength of schedule. So I feel like with them and with any Pac-12 team, the margin for error is so slim. You just can't afford to stumble. The best case scenario for the conference is it comes down to like Utah and Washington at the end, and they both have zero losses or maybe one loss, and then it's a situation where the winner is in a good place to go to the playoff. But even as good as those teams looked, I'm not optimistic.
You think
because
Utah's capable of making the playoff?
Oh, yeah. I'm not alone in that. There's a lot of people. A lot of the ESPN experts picked Utah. Look, they have a great defense. Maybe one of the top five defensive lines in the country. Great secondary. The issues that they have, to me, are whether their quarterback and running back can stay healthy. Mm-hmm. That has been a problem year in and year out for them, keeping the quarterback, keeping the running back healthy. I remember talking to Petros Papadakis about all the running backs in the Pac-12. Zach Moss was the one that he liked the best. And he had some, what did he have, 190-something yards against a really tough and physical BYU team in week one? Mm-hmm.
They got to put Petros in the press box. Don't they have former USC football players as broadcasters in the press box?
O.J. Simpson is on that list, and Petros Papadakis is not. He's persona non grata at USC. It's not surprising. Not surprising.
But, guys, let's do Pac-12 pick'ems. Let's go through the list of the games for this weekend, and let's predict who's going to win. Sacramento State against ASU. Who do you got on that one?
ASU.
Northern Illinois against Utah.
Utah,
although it might be a little bit closer than people think, because Northern Illinois is just kind of a tough. They're a tough MAC out. Right.
They played there. Utah played there. I believe it was either last year or the year before, and it was a heck of a game.
Yeah.
This is not a team you take lightly, but Utah's very good.
Yeah. Did Paxton Lynch go to Northern Illinois? What's the quarterback that came out of Illinois?
That's not Paxton Lynch. No. But it's
Paxton Lynch went to Memphis.
Oh, that's right.
But no, there was a quarterback from NIU with a similar name who put up crazy numbers.
I think they tried to make him like a tight end or an H-back in the NFL.
Well, we have Google on our side.
We'll find this. We'll find this. Go ahead.
A really interesting game. Last year, Colorado, they went up and beat Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Scott Frost's debut.
Debut, right.
Do the Buffaloes, can they do it again this season?
Jordan Lynch.
There it is.
The guy from NIU.
His last name
was Lynch.
He was like a poor man's Tebow.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. No, the answer is no. The answer is no, they cannot beat Nebraska. I love this game, though. I mean, this is an old old-timey Big 8, Big 12 showdown.
They definitely can beat Nebraska.
I don't think they will.
I try not to put too much into what you see in week one, but Colorado looked better than Nebraska in week one. And the game's in Colorado, so I'm taking the Buffs.
I'm taking the Huskers. Maybe Lev and I will bet a Coke on this off air.
San Diego State versus UCLA
Bruins,
in the Rose Bowl.
Bruins.
You like the Bruins now?
I'm taking the Aztecs.
I'll go Bruins.
I may have watched the second half of the Aztecs Weber State game, Michael Lev. You don't want to take the Aztecs.
I'm just saying it might get worse before it gets better for Chip Kelly.
Very
down
true.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Colorado versus Washington State in Pullman.
Oh, God.
No-brainer right there.
No-brainer.
By 60, Wazoo. Yes.
Nevada versus Oregon in Eugene.
Super interesting game in that Nevada pulled off like a miraculous comeback last week, and their freshman kicker made a 56-yarder at the buzzer, and then he got a scholarship in the locker room.
It's like whoever's the star player for Nevada in that game, they get a scholarship. Because in the Arizona Bowl, they had a wide receiver get a scholarship.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was super exciting and dramatic, but I think reality sets in. You're going to have a very motivated and angry Oregon team. You're going to have a Nevada team that's sort of ripe for a letdown. Oregon rolls.
I think this is an attention to detail game. I'm not sure Oregon was very good at the details, at the small stuff against Auburn. To me, they tighten that up and win this thing pretty easily.
So we got some conference play this week. Okay. Cal taking on Washington in Seattle. Stanford also taking on USC. I'm interested in that Stanford-USC game because it's like the best. Whoever has the best backup quarterback is going to win this game.
Right. It's the what's your deal game, right?
I have no idea what's going to happen in that Stanford-USC game. I'll take Stanford just because I feel like they're, generally speaking, better coached. It's possible that neither team will have its starting quarterback. We know that USC won't. It's possible Stanford won't either. They also lost their really good left tackle to injury in a very physical game against Northwestern last week. That was just about as fun to watch as the San Diego State Weber State game. Slight edge to Stanford. They're at home, right?
Yeah.
I wonder how bad it's got to get before USC makes a change.
It's at the Coliseum, by the way.
It's at the Coliseum.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't change my pick.
Right. Who's SC playing week three? Do you know, Lev?
Off the top of my head. It's a non-con opponent. who I think is pretty good.
Wouldn't it be a conference
BYU.
Game?
Oh, BYU.
BYU.
Okay.
Let's say just a quick exercise here. Let's say SC starts 0-3.
Yeah, I think he might be fired.
He might be
fired.
I mean, I think it's dumb to fire a coach because his starting quarterback got hurt. But I'm not sure.
Because that's a question.
I'm not sure he's coming back next year one way or another.
I mean, that's not the reason.
Should he get fired? No, because of the quarterback situation. But will he get fired?
Right.
Well, yeah, because it's USC.
Well, USC is just such a mess, though. I mean, people question the athletic director, whether he ever should have been hired in the first place. You know, obviously they were deeply involved in the college admissions scandal, and there's still stories coming out like every single day from the LA Times.
And Becky.
Digging into that stuff. I mean, it's like way beyond any of that. I don't know. They've got leadership issues at that school. I like Clay Helton. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's a good person. Mm-hmm. I think he's very well intentioned. I think he just might be in a little tiny bit over his head. As the coach of USC, like if he was the coach at, give me San Diego State, for example, you know, I think
that's
that would be like
level.
A good that would be a good level for him.
Memphis Tigers.
Tigers. Yeah. I'm not sure that USC is a good fit for him.
Right.
And vice versa.
I know this is not a USC podcast, but I want to make this one last point. USC runs the spread now.
Yep.
Let's talk about optics quickly. If you're looking to fire the head coach at USC, that sentence might just be enough. If they struggle with this new offense, it's an offense that's very quarterback predicated, and your quarterback is hurt. This is an offense that could be really bad next week. To me, running a spread at USC is borderline sacrilege, and may, you know, just give people just the reason they need to fire Clay Helton.
Tailback you. Running the air raid.
Crazy.
It's great.
What else we got?
Before we get to NAU, Arizona, that's going to be our last
Washington
one.
Washington and Cal, by
Washington
the way.
And Cal, yeah.
It's going to be like Washington 17, Cal 3.
Yeah, something like
one
that.
Of those
you got the Huskies?
Yeah. Physical game.
I like the Huskies, not too.
Ugly game, but yeah.
We can't get away from them. Oregon State taking on Hawaii at Aloha Stadium.
At like 8:59 p.m. Pacific time. Which, if that's what I saw the other day.
You know why they do that? They do that so it's not midnight Eastern and it's not a Sunday game.
Right, yeah.
So they stay on the Saturday TV listings by being 11:59 Eastern on
and,
Saturday.
And really? And I think the game is on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
Pac-12 After Dark on Facebook.
It's a whole thing going on over there in Hawaii. I will take Hawaii in that game.
Yeah, I tried to watch some Oregon State last week against Oklahoma State, and certainly they have a running back. But sort of size and toughness that I associate with Oregon State, I just don't see.
The Beavers' defense is still really bad.
Yep, not good.
Really bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, and we have this Saturday, Arizona. Taking on NAU at Arizona Stadium. Kickoff is slated for 7:45, and you can watch it on Pac-12 networks. I love this game just because of the head coaching matchups. I had a chance to speak with NAU head coach Chris Ball. Had no idea that the two coached together at Washington State. Kevin Sumlin and Chris Ball both roomed with each other. They were roommates. And they also wooed Drew Bledsoe to commit to Washington State. When Drew Bledsoe was on his recruiting visit in Pullman, Kevin Sumlin, Chris Ball, they got all the fraternities and all the sororities to all line up as Drew Bledsoe was leaving campus. They're singing the fight song, and they firmly believe that was what got Drew Bledsoe to commit to Washington State.
Pretty cool.
So Kevin Sumlin had a hand in getting Drew Bledsoe to Washington State.
You've got to take it to a higher level in Pullman.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get good players. No offense to Pullman.
No. I think this is an interesting game. Can I just jump into my prediction here?
Go for it.
I think it's an interesting game, again, because of optics. If all the air kind of came out of Arizona's season 2 weeks ago, what does Arizona need to do to get the air back in it? To me, that means win convincingly on Saturday. To me, that means beating Texas Tech, possibly convincingly. And then their first conference game is UCLA.
Yes.
I think that means them beating UCLA. They can win 3 in a row, be 3-1. Heading back to Colorado. All of a sudden, we got football again, right? All of a sudden, this is a team worth buzzing about. To me, the optics say that Arizona has to win and win easily. I'm going to say it just because let's call it 60-17. Okay. Arizona. I think Khalil Tate plays a half. I think he plays a great half. I think Arizona runs the football a ton and wins, again, by 43 points, 60-17.
Lev?
We didn't talk about the Arizona defense at all in this game, which is obviously a huge, huge problem against Hawaii. I think we need to see from this defense domination at the line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. harassing Case Cookus, making his life miserable. I was looking at the projected starting lineup for NAU or last week's starters on the offensive line. They only have one 300-pounder up front. So if you can't dominate a line like this, then you're not going to be able to dominate any line. I need to see Jalen Harris in the backfield, J.B. Brown in the backfield. I want to see Fenton Connolly on the field more than he was last week. Keep saying it. It all starts up front, both sides of the football. So looking for a better defensive performance, more running, got to be a dominant overall performance and kind of like a clean game.
Right.
You know, not a minimal turnovers, minimal penalties. I'll say something like Arizona 56, NAU 17.
I think this is going to be a game where you're going to see experimental work from Marcel Yates. You're going to see different linebacker blitzes. You're going to see different schemes. This is an opponent to do that. You know, last week, Hawaii, you know, you're on the road. You wanted to keep everything simple because your main focus is just to win. Now, with the defense being the way it is right now, I think this is a great opportunity for Marcel Yates to really throw some wrinkles into that defense and try some things out against NAU because they got a good quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like Case Cookus has been playing at NAU for the last 10 years now.
Yeah, he's 36 years old. Yeah, we went to high school together.
but he's a really good quarterback. If you can get to him and you can rattle him a little bit, mm-hmm. it's going to be an easy night for Arizona. And I think mm-hmm. that's why I said you're going to see different linebacker blitzes. They're going to get to the quarterback.
Okay, score. Give me a score.
Score, I'm going to go Arizona 52, mm-hmm. NAU 20.
Nice. I will argue that point for you or with you very briefly. I think that Arizona's goal in this game is to show nothing. I think that they're going to
really?
Come up, they're going to come out, try to go vanilla on both sides. You don't want Texas Tech. I mean, if you're going to break out the wrinkles and the trickery and the different stuff, I think you're going to do it in what is definitely a must-win game next week against Texas Tech. So I think Arizona's going to come out and run like, you know, 13 different plays, and that's it.
On offense.
I think defensively, you're going out of your base, and you're saying, okay. Beat the guy in front of you. Again, they should have a size advantage. They should have a skill advantage on defense. I think that this is going to be one of those keep it simple, stupid kind of games.
Yeah, I also think that we're going to see a lot of freshmen play for Arizona.
Right.
They're going to take advantage of the redshirt rule, throw a lot of guys out there. You know, hopefully it will be a one-sided game, and you know the stakes won't be that high when that's happening. But I think we're going to see a lot of freshmen. I think we might see Grant Gunnell make his Arizona debut sometime in the second half of that game, which would you know, that's a reason to stick around and keep watching.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. The Arizona Wildcats taking on the NAU Lumberjacks this Saturday. Kickoff is set for 7:45 p.m. You can watch it on Pac-12 networks, but make sure you follow the Wildcaster on Twitter at the Wildcaster and download the Wildcaster app for all of your Arizona Wildcats coverage. For Lev, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. And big shout out to Frog and Firkin.